Madam, the three Krampus gentlemen have arrived and are settling into their guest rooms.
Excellent, Mr. Darling. I was hoping they'd be settled before tonight's reading. Where is little Miranda?
She's been hiding behind doors and popping out of the Krampuses for fun. I'm rather worried they will catch her.
Let them catch me. Her. She needs a good shock and taught a lesson. We'll bargain for her return after the reading.
Ha! Delightful idea, madam.
Season's greetings, my dear guests. We're so pleased to welcome you into the Midnight Library tonight for a special holiday reading. I am your humble and harmless librarian and host, Miranda Merrick. We ask that you please choose a seat and keep to it if at all possible this evening. If you must move about, as always, we remind you to stay strictly within the cordoned off areas. We would like to keep the library as peaceful and drama-free as a courtesy to some refined guests we have staying with us. They visit every year about this time and rely on the quiet atmosphere of the library as a kind of respite along their journey. It's not that they're antisocial, actually. It's just that they've traveled a distance from their far-off land and are enjoying their rest and privacy. You understand, I'm sure. Not all guests should mix with other guests for a reason. We also most sincerely apologize if you find that you have picked up a few more bits of stray fur or animal hairs on your clothing than usual on this visit. Mr. Darling tries his best to oversee the maids keep up with the typical amount that's shed, but there's just more this time of year, and it may cause you to itch just a bit, or to break out into large, pulsing purple pustules. But the good news is, it's not toxic. As this reading takes place at a special time of year, dear guests, we thought the subject matter should be rather unique, too. So, in an effort to embrace this spirited season, we wanted to bring you a lively but dark tale surrounding holiday lore from long ago, when people weren't quite so nice to children. So, if hearing the actual history of how some of our ancestral groups dealt with wayward children, and the impressive lengths they were willing to go to in order to keep their children in line doesn't sound appealing to you, perhaps you have left something on your stove and need to tend to it. And to those of you who aren't put off by such bold truths and are perhaps even amused or entertained by such things, well, you've chosen wisely to visit us tonight. Let us begin. Speaking of appealing, half man, half goat, half man, half demon. What a fine mix of admirable creatures. Tall and muscular, imposing and dreadful. Krampus is a frighteningly spectacular being to behold. A grizzled face that glares from beneath long, wild hair. From his gaping maw, thick yellow-pronged teeth are seen, and deeply rooted in his massive skull, a set of terrifying horns protrude. His tremendous brawny frame, utterly covered in crudely cut animal hides and strange furs, a hellish beast bent on his mission to complete his terrible task. He often wears a bandolier of bells that can be ominously heard as he approaches. And I shan't even attempt to describe his, let us just say, ample tongue. The creature is often portrayed wearing heavy iron manacles or shackles strung by a length of broad gauge chain that join or dangle from his powerful wrists. He brandishes a threatening bundle of branches in his clawed hand, and upon his broad back, a large woven basket is slung. His feet are beautifully sturdy cloven hooves. Although we have seen a Krampus with one cloven hoof and one clawed foot, portrayed in a book, of course. His very name, Krampus, from the old German word Krampen, means claw. Strange how close that is to the name Claus, isn't it? In Norse mythology, he is said to be the son of the goddess Hel, spelled H-E-L. Hel was the daughter of the trickster god Loki. She ruled the downward kingdom, and her official title is the goddess of death. So be sure to address your fan mail to her properly. So, if Krampus is her son, and in times long past it was believed that he truly was, because of his resemblance to the goat-headed, horned god so viscerally represented in witchcraft, and the fact that he carries a strong rod of birch with a spray of scratchy branches resembling a huge broom, well, it only gives more credence to the inkling that there are historic threads visible today that lead all the way back through witchcraft to Hell, spelled H-E-L-L. Our special holiday reading tonight is sponsored by Grampus Krampus Kitty Baskets, a tisket, a tasket, a child-vexing basket. Busy young Krampuses don't have time to toy with twigs and weave with twine. Retired Krampus makes baskets all day, so young Krampus can stay up and play. Grampus Krampus makes a happy camper when they slam that kid into his hamper. They're festive on the outside, shiny and new. Dreadful on the inside, all slimy with goo. Lined with rocks and pointy thumbtacks, stinking of skunk and ogre earwax. Old Grampus Krampus kitty baskets, a tisket, a tasket, a child-vexing basket. On gloomy winter's endless nights, by dim candles and fireplace light, in days of yore, the tales told by forefathers so obscure that we can only conjure their likenesses in our imaginations, Krampus was the demon goatman that was said to be a willing, helpful partner in the kindly workings of another, still ethereal, but certainly more human man, Saint Nicholas. And in some versions of the tale, Krampus was the child-minding business partner of the Pope. Good and evil, it's a little sad how they need each other. In order to seem blameless or powerless over the forces of the unknown, and to instill a sense of responsibility and good moral character into their children, parents, since countless years ago, have, let's be kind, embellished the truth about the natural laws of justice. Children were told that there were magical visitors who intuitively knew just what every child was up to, and they were coming to dole out their kind of justice. After all, bad behavior could not be rewarded, and it didn't seem very saintly for a joyful, gift-bearing old gentleman to bestow treasures upon a good child, and then turn and act with cruelty to punish a bad one. To exact this kind of impartial justice, St. Nicholas used to be part of a team, the dynamics of which were simple. Nick was nice to the good, and Krampus was nasty to the bad. And parents were blameless in all of it, nothing to do with them. They've just been trying to bring you up right and instill some decency in you. If you haven't got sense enough to behave, well, then there's nothing they can do to protect you, you brat. Even a child can understand that if you willfully and without provocation harm or steal from a person, you will, if caught, have to face punishment as directed by the laws that govern your person and lands. The punishment of being taken away, locked up, fined, or even going so far as to separate body from soul is meant to deter any unwanted behavior in polite society. But that's if they catch you. In centuries past, there was another aspect of child rearing that is often forgotten about today. There were not only more children in a typical family from past times, but they were often a key component in the success of the family. The children, even the wee ones, had to work. It was often the reason they were brought into being in the first place. Well, that and the laws of human nature, if you understand my meaning. In a sprawling, rural, and rustic landscape, and even in more populated villages and towns, children were raised entirely at home, which was often a farm or craftsman's homestead. In order for the working family to survive, every hand that could accomplish a task was desperately needed and expected to do so. And it was expected that the task would be completed in harmony with all the other children and adults in the household. It was not uncommon for a typical couple to have more than a dozen children. You might now begin to sympathize with how two exhausted parents at the end of a non-stop, dusk-to-dawn, work-laden day might need a little help from a giant, fang-dripping half-demon. We have a similar philosophy regarding the public here in the library. In an effort to convey to their children that godlike forces oversaw their actions from their supernatural realms, they enlisted the benevolent powers of such entities as Saint Nicholas, whose sole endeavor and delight in life was to reward good children, and his helpful workmate Krampus, whose befitting demeanor more than equipped him with the ability to terrorize and torment the children who had broken the rules of the household by not doing their chores, fighting with their siblings, and disrespecting their parents. In this light, Krampus is not so much seen as a bad guy, but more as a being just doing the work he's so perfectly suited to do. And he does seem to enjoy his job. I would like to interject here that your beloved Saint Nicholas is the patron saint of thieves, although they must be repentant to qualify for clemency. This seems to me to be befitting, as he is, after all, resplendent at breaking into houses. At some point in time, the simple talk of these omnipresent beings with their disturbing ability to see you when you're sleeping and know when you're awake, and the vague promises of goodies for the good and veiled threats of whippings for the wicked, apparently was not accomplishing the desired effect. Thus was born the idea of bringing the colorful folklore characters to life. This is how we have the tradition of visiting and even having breakfast with Santa today. And why, since written history, vivid descriptions and depictions of both Santa and Krampus are so abundant. This is also how Northern European cultures have, in the past and even today, held events like the running of the Krampus. Just as you may have seen the running of the bulls, the streets filled with eager people of all ages, excited for the ruckus arrival of real live Krampus monsters, with their devil horns and grotesque faces, clamoring bells, and frightening demeanor. The beastly beings raise a commotion and tear through the crowd to make their presence real to everyone in their path. There's chaos and music, drumming and dancing, a thrilling mix of fright and delight as the monsters run riot through the streets. Other countries have a Santa parade. Ugh. When the lore of Krampus began to spread further into more Christian faith-based countries, the Catholic Church is thought to be the reason he had begun to be depicted wearing cumbersome chains, the chains being symbolic of binding the devil, as if that were possible. By the 12th century, the Church had had enough of this demon being part of their holy celebration, and attempted to banish Krampus from their festivities. Even as recent as the 1930s, the Catholic Church, as well as some political parties in Krampus's homelands of Germany and Austria, put into action an outright ban on the presence of the Christmas demon. Thankfully, this effort failed. The Krampus creature was by now a beloved fixture in the hearts and minds of the people. That's why they're here with us tonight. I mean, you know, in this story. Attention all Krampuses. We're happy to announce and glad to report our sponsor tonight is a Krampus resort. Exhausted from bringing the frightening doom, book your retreat in the Krampus steam room. Relax in the sauna until your mind is clear. No more children for you for at least a year. Our attendants comb fur with the lightest of touch. They'll pull through the tangles, but it won't hurt that much. They'll scrape from your tongue all the glitter and must, the work that the holiday puts there in a crust. They'll soothe backaches from hauling bad children about. They remove gum from your horns without pulling them out. Take the cramp out of Krampus at the Krampus Steam Room. Dial 976-BRAT. And there's more than one version of Krampus to meet. He has a beastly band of brothers. Well, sort of. It's more as though he has various incarnations by way of the different regions from which he sprang. From the Alsace territory in northeastern France, near both Germany and Switzerland, comes Hans Trapp, a human so evil that he became a kind of monster. The legend tells of Trapp being a wealthy but greedy man with a wicked streak and a voracious appetite for children, excommunicated from the Catholic Church for his abhorrent behavior, and even while in exile he was said to stuff his clothing with straw and disguise himself as a scarecrow. He would then stand stock still in fields where the crops were harvested by working children, and when the time was right, and a random child would venture close, he would pounce, catch the child, and eat them. There's even one version of the lore surrounding Hans Trapp that has him returning from the dead to continue his depraved habits. In this tale, God himself spies Hans about to eat a small boy, and is so immediately infuriated that he allows a lightning bolt to strike Trapp dead. But undead Hans continues as evil incarnate, roaming the earth dressed as a disheveled scarecrow, waiting for a child to come by. In further tellings, closer to our dear friend Krampus, Hans Trapp is forced into servitude alongside of Saint Nicholas. While the saint hands out rewards to righteous children, Hans is there as a warning to coax the badly behaved children onto the path of moral decency. What may be most unsettling about Hans Trapp is that he is thought to be modeled after an actual man, Hans van Trapp, a German knight who was an atrocious menace to the church and townspeople where he lived. Another version of a horrible human whose deeds earned him a spot alongside of Saint Nicholas is that of Frenchman La Pierre Fouettard. His legendary crimes from the 1100s are worthy of any modern serial killer. To save us from too many gory details, I believe it would be sufficient to say that Fouettard was a butcher of children. The fabled stories of him portray him as an innkeeper of sorts, and upon having the honor of Saint Nicholas as a guest, he offers the old saint some of the fine meat he has soaking in a briny bath of salt water for curing. Saint Nick not only refuses to eat the meat, but recognizes the heinousness committed against the children, and immediately performs a miracle, resurrecting them back to life and sending them safely on their way. Fouettard is then sentenced to a life of servitude beside Saint Nicholas. His look is distinctly grim, with a long bedraggled beard hanging from a grotesquely evil face, and dressed in bleak black robes, making him almost reaper-like. Amazingly, his job is to punish the naughty children by flogging them with a martinet, a kind of whipping device that's handle is a short rod with many lashes of leather or stiff rough cord sprouting from its end. La Pierre Fouettard's name, when translated, means father whipper. And last but in no way least, although perhaps a bit more gentle, we have Belznickel, also from the southwestern region of Germany. His name interprets as Bell, meaning fur, and Nickel, referring to Saint Nicholas. Belznickel is an earthly, rugged-looking character. He's clamorous and grouchy and tall and imposing. A man-creature, he wears a mix of old ragtag clothing that is covered by coarsely cut, cobbled-together furs and hides. Bits of foliage and vines and brambles can be seen entangled in his long, unkempt hair and beard, as well as ensnared in the rough animal pelts that wrap his massive form. From his head, a hefty set of antlers emerge, although it's difficult to say if he's grown them himself or if they are merely part of his forest-gathered ensemble. At times, he appears wearing a crudely fashioned, grimacing mask. Other times, he covers his face in what seems to be mud-mixed paints, meant to enhance even more his gruesome features. He carries a huge bundle of stiff-branched birch switches, and a roughly woven canvas or burlap sack. Oddly, Belznickel works alone. You won't find him in partnership with any old saint or Santa. He doesn't travel far either, but is dedicated to and keeps to his own village. In the dark, dreary, bone-chilling night, he approaches the houses of the children he knows are inside. He taps and scratches at their window with his frosty branches. And then suddenly he bursts inside the house and is terrifyingly face to face with the children, demanding their truthful confession of their behavior. He gruffly commands to know,
"Have you been obedient and respectful to your parents? Have you done your chores and schoolwork? Have you been kind to your siblings and schoolmates?
Children who hesitate and cannot seem to answer with assured confirmation of good behavior are in desperate danger of being swatted with the stinging birch switches he points at them as he demands their answers. Children who can attest to their gentle nature and give examples of their virtues are given treats of candies and cakes and cookies from his grungy cloth bag. When his interrogations are complete, Belsnickel departs as quickly as he arrived. And in this same manner, I'm afraid we must do the same. The evening has grown late, and the moon is tipping past the point of usefulness. And we're sure you have sleep to chase, and we have our other guests to attend to. Please do be careful on your way back through the forest. And remember, if you should see Mr. Darling as you walk, you needn't worry. However, if you don't see Mr. Darling, run. Good night, my dear guests.
Excellent Krampus reading tonight, Badu. Did you hear them stirring in the rooms overhead as you read? I believe they're packing up.
Well, just between you and I, darling, I am ready to see the back of them. The biggest one keeps asking if I'd like to try out his broom, and then he winks at me. Ugh. So, what did you have to offer them in trade to get little Miranda back?
You know, the adjacent Henderson farm, with the 12 ornery boys on it.
The Dirty Dozen? Yes, what a load of monsters those kids are. You had to promise to provide all 12 of them to the Krampuses in trade just to get our little Miranda back?
Not exactly, madam. I had to agree to take little Miranda back. The Henderson boys are a kind of a consolation gift I threw in for all their trouble.
Even then, you could tell I was going to be one powerful witch.
Madam, she's tied with them pink.
The Midnight Library is proudly brought to you by Miranda Merrick and everyone at Astonishing Legends. Sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. A good library always needs good-hearted patrons. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. And for a bit more fun, we've added the League of Lady Gravediggers merch to our online Redbubble shop.